This episode of the Press Row Podcast is brought to you by Franchise Hockey Manager 4, just announced. You can pre-order it today and get 10% off and get it 4 days early. Franchise Hockey Manager 4 is the definitive hockey strategy game, the most hockey ever, officially licensed by the NHL. So much happening in Franchise Hockey Manager 4. We've got the new 2017-18 season with the Vegas Golden Knights. You can take them as they have been chosen, or you can redo the expansion draft your way. You've got every NHL season ever. Every single NHL franchise has a historical challenge that you can look to complete for achievements. And there are tons of gameplay improvements driven by the community. We have an amazing community in the Franchise Hockey Manager 4 world. So yes, once again, Franchise Hockey Manager 4 just announced it releases on October 6th. But if you pre-order today through Out of the Park Developments, you can get it early, 4 days early on October 2nd and 10% off. We're also really excited today to announce the Press Row Podcast strategic partnership with Gamer Saloon. Gamer Saloon is a place where you can go play games and you can win some money. You can play any game for any amount, any time, day or night. It is a completely customizable gaming for cash experience, and you can participate for as little or as much as you want to. And if you download their app today, that's the Gamer Saloon app, and you use the code PRESSROW, you will get a 50% bonus on your deposit. So if, like me, you go in and you put in $20, then you get an extra $10 for free. And they take PayPal, which is, of course, what I use for everything, or all major credit cards. It's very safe, it's very secure, and most of all, it's very fun. These guys have been around for more than a decade. They've awarded more than $45 million in cash. And everybody here in the Press Row community, we are in on Gamer Saloon. I'm going to be playing in tournaments with Pasta Padre, with TJ Lowerman, that's Sports Gamer, with Snaggle J, with Millennium, and I'm going to take all their money. I'm going to beat them at NBA Live. I'm going to beat them at NBA 2K. I'm going to beat them at Madden. I'm going to beat them at FIFA. I'm going to beat them at Pro Evo. I'm going to do all of that. I'm going to do all of that at Gamer Saloon. You can too. You can join us. You can do tournaments with your friends. You can play immediate one versus one matches with anybody in the community. There's all sorts of different ways to play, but ultimately it's how you want to play. You can play for as little or as much as you want to. All the games you love, anytime, day or night. It's Gamer Saloon. Go get the Gamer Saloon app, iOS or Android, or go to gamersaloon.com. Use the code PRESSROW. Get 50% bonus money on your deposit and help out the Press Row Podcast. Do what we do. We're going to be working with Gamer Saloon all fall this year. We're going to be having a lot of fun. We're going to be talking about it. Join us, Gamer Saloon, code PRESSROW. Get a 50% bonus and go have some fun.
For basketball video game fans, it's the best time of the year. It's also one of the best years for it in a long time because there are now two viable products to choose from. While we have a pretty good idea of how the upcoming NBA season is going to play out, there's not really any suspense to the regular season or even much of the playoffs. We may be seeing the early stages of a battle that will be brewing for the years ahead between NBA 2K and NBA Live. Thanks for tuning in for this episode of the Press Row Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Wiedei, Pasta Padre. And here, in this episode, we're going to assess the merits and deficiencies of both NBA 2K18 and NBA Live 18. We're also going to hit on some of the big stories that have followed release, the uproar around the implementation of virtual currency in NBA 2K18, and the vanishing of My Players, which has erased time and money from thousands of people who have found themselves affected. Here with me are Rich Grisham of Out of the Park Developments, Owen Good of Polygon, Chris, a.k.a. Mills Gaming TV from Operation Sports and his Twitch channel. I've also got US Gamers' Kat Bailey for a segment that you'll find during this episode. It'll be fun to explore, really, the second sport now that has anything resembling competition in the video gaming space. So I'll start with you, Mills. NBA 2K18 is this behemoth. It's grown into something bigger than anybody really thought a basketball game could be as far as its cultural impact and its reach to not just basketball fans, but it has reached a wider scale audience, I'd say. It's big. It's across the world. It's the second biggest sports game now. And it's within North America, it's the biggest. So, you know, what do you think about NBA 2K18? Because they're really, over the last few years, they've expanded their feature set. The ambition is high with this series. They're always trying to innovate. But it's also become a very complex game to play. It's one of the when we talk about accessibility, it's one of the more difficult games to get started with. It's one of the deepest games, but it's also intimidating in large part due to that. So just give me your initial impressions of NBA 2K18 from your early hours or however long you've now put into it, because I know you've been playing it quite a bit now.
Well, I agree with you. The depth of 2K is definitely its strength, but as you said, it's also its weakness at this point. There is, and it's not only in its modes and what you can do in the modes, but also on the court. My initial impression when I got on the court was I saw a bunch of little things that I didn't like. I saw defensive assignments that were missed, and not just missed randomly like I'd like to see with a simulation basketball game. Like, I was seeing guys sag off of defenders all the way to under the rim, standing there for 2 seconds and then going back out. That was my first impression turning on the game, because I streamed it with 100 and some people and decided on a Saturday night to try to play my GM. Mm-hmm. My second impression is my GM is the best franchise mode in sports gaming, and I don't think it's even close.
Are you saying my GM over my league? So you like the story of my GM?
Let me connect my GM and my league together, because they're both essentially franchise mode.
Right.
And as you said, the story in my GM, which can be a little flaky at times, I think everyone will agree with that. But then my league being able to customize it to any way you want, much like last year, the fact that they added a story mode into franchise mode now makes there, again, so many different ways to play. If you're a basketball fan, and even for some people that aren't basketball fans, I think 2K has a way for you to play. And I think that's an extremely good thing. And then, but it also has a lot of ways for you to get lost in the game and the menus in all kinds of different modes. So I think it's very, overwhelming at first for anybody to step into the game, both game modes and on the game and on the court. But I also think that it's the game that rewards you the most for putting the time into it.
They do give you a lot of tools to apply to. Let's just starting with gameplay. They give you a lot of options. Now, is the problem that most people don't understand they're there or don't understand how to utilize them?
I think it's a little of both. Basketball fans in general will know that, like, defense. So on defense, you have defensive IQ of each individual player. You have system proficiency, which is the coach, his game plan, and how each individual player affects that and how they affect it as a team. And then you have, again, people making random mistakes at times. I still think there are upgrades to be made to the defensive AI. Offensively, the game looks gorgeous. When you go into an offensive motion, it looks like real bad. You take your hand off the controller for 5-6 seconds at a time, and the game looks like absolute real basketball. But again, there are so many, like, play calling is very in-depth. You have to hit one button to bring the play calling up, hit the player that you want to play the call for next. Then you have to, the very first thing is just cut isolation, your general plays. Then you have to understand the plays if you want to run those. Or you just turn play calling off and play how you want. A lot of people just like to do that. But I think if you are at a severe disadvantage if you don't play call, if you don't understand the play call.
Right.
So again, now we're already getting into, you've got to put the time in to learn the play call. You've got to get the time in to learn your players. You got to get the time in to learn your coach. You get the time in to learn your system. That's already adding up to somebody that plays 2K full time, as opposed to somebody that wants to play 2K along with the 80 million other sports games, not to mention, you know, the holiday gaming season in as a whole. So it's very challenging to learn everything in the game, which again is a very strong point for those that are big time basketball heads, but a weak point for casual to, you know, just above casual gamers.
What stood out to me the most when I first started playing was they did tout a few things gameplay wise, and I thought what did stand out the most was they have a new motion system that they put into place, and it was. Or a new movement system. But what it really does is reduces the impact or the reliance on animations. And for years, people have kind of grumbled about the animation-heavy nature of NBA 2K. It's part of the reason why the games look so natural, why you could look at the game running in broadcast camera, and someone might look at it initially and think that looks like a real basketball game, because the animations made it that way. But the issue is that it essentially would take some control away from the player when you got taken into these animations. They've reduced that a little bit, and I thought what it made it feel like was that the game was a little more open, a little more free, and that made it more enjoyable in my mind. It felt like everybody was moving in a more realistic manner. You could better take advantage of mismatches. You could get into the paint. You could finish a little better. So that to me was the main thing. Because when we go year to year in these sports games, a lot of times it's tough to identify. Even for a reviewer who's putting in hours with the sole purpose of trying to evaluate these games, it's very difficult because it's still a small sample size. But I thought it's worth noting that that did stand out to me, that that was something they promoted heavily in blogs, because this is not really something that comes across in a trailer or that they're going to hype up in a trailer, but in blogs talking about gameplay, this would have a major impact, and I thought it did. Did you get the same feeling from it as I did?
I did. And you can still, like, Czar and Scott OG are still doing streams to explain stuff in game and not being publicized for it. Like, 2K doesn't even mention when Czar goes online. I try to open as many eyes as I can to it. I know other people in this podcast do, but, like, people aren't going to be able to catch that all the time. I would say 90% of the people that play 2K don't know who Czar OG is. And well, they put out the best information for
that's
it.
That's one of the problems I've had over the years with the way 2K handles things, especially in social media, is that their PR and community people are the faces of the game. And they push, you know, what's flashy, what's going to get the, you know, what's going to spread across the internet, and what's going to go on the back of the box, or whatever you want to call it now that mostly it's digital. But the actual developers and the very specific work that goes into the game every year often gets overlooked because of that. I think that's unfortunate. A lot of people don't even recognize who they are. They don't, you know, they don't have the following that the others do. And so, yeah, it's unfortunate because there's a lot that's built into the game, like we've been talking about, that these options that you have that could be effective and could be appreciated by a lot more people if they knew they were there and if they knew how to utilize them.
Well, and I think the other problem here is we're talking about 5-on-5 gameplay, whereas the most popular mode in the game right now, it's not my team, it's not franchise, it's my park, which is regularly 2-on-2, 3-on-3. Even Pro-Am, the 5-on-5 gameplay you have there are five different people playing, so you're missing out on a lot of what these guys specialize in, making a simulation basketball game. Where you're getting all the popularity to, and rightfully so. It does the most numbers on Twitch. It does the most views on YouTube. Rightfully so, My Park is the king right now. That is where, and that's why, you know, that's where their money is spent. That's where most players spend their time. That's, you see, everyone's trying to grind to 99 this year. It's supposed to be longer than ever.
Just what we needed.
Yep, exactly. So, and the fact, I mean, it's still connected to my career, obviously, but with that mode being the top mode, I'm upset that they don't publicize more of these guys' work and the work that they put into the game. But to be fair, Ronnie and Chris Manning both talk about My Park constantly, and they talk about the Pro-Am tournament when it comes up, and the E-League has come up, which again has nothing really to do with what Scott OG and Czar and these gameplay guys are doing outside of control of the player. I do agree with you that control feels more in the user's hands this year, not only for on ball, but off ball. I do feel like that I have more control of the ball when it's moving around. And the game absolutely is better off for it. I agree that off-ball movement looks much better this year. I think there's a little more sliding this year than there has been in years past, and I think that's a direct impact from the fact that it's a new motion cap or new motion engine, something that they can tune and tweak as it goes. And that does affect the immersion a little bit. But for the most part, I think you're correct. I think the new motion engine really has been a very big positive for the game.
Oh, and I have a question for you, and that's leading off from what Mills was just kind of talking about there. These sports games, nowadays, are becoming less and less about the actual leagues, less and less about, in the case of basketball, actual 5-on-5 NBA, because they're going towards the ultimate team type modes, where it's a fantasy type mode, where you're bringing in just players and you don't actually use the real teams, or you're going to the online modes where it is like 2-on-2, 3-on-3. Or any mishmash you want to go through throughout all the sports games. Like, is that, do you see any danger in that they're going away from the leagues that they're meant to represent as far as fandom and whether people will follow, or is this just kind of a temporary thing?
I don't know that I would call it danger. I think it's a natural evolution on an iterative product, especially as, I've said this for years, the increase in power in the console generations between the last one and this one, it's still a refining of the product. People weren't really complaining about, Xbox 360 or PS3 visuals or things like that. So you're still talking about, refining how things look and refining, how the engines worked in your career modes and things like that. And fans were, going, we need something different. We need a really big new mode. I remember, Madden facing these problems and getting very stale about 6 years ago. I think it's a natural evolution of studios that are on a 1 year development cycle, feeling the burn of, well, we've got to do something big. And if we're going to throw it all into one thing, we'll find that and we'll do something big. But the other thing too, is, the lure of the unlimited revenue stream is another reason why these things get so much attention. And it's, as you mentioned, Ultimate Team, My Career, all that kind of stuff. These are publicly traded companies, the ones that can afford the licenses anyway, who do this. And I think they're lured a little bit more by that siren song. I mean, what you're really talking about, but I think it's a little bit of a different story, and I'm sure we'll get to this later, is, NBA Live has, I think, a good single player career. Mm-hmm. It's just the staple modes aren't really there. Right. They're kind of a Potemkin village. And, that is dangerous, but it's also NBA Live. I think everybody knows what its history is on this and how much trouble they've had, getting things into a playable state. And I think that they probably made a good choice when they said, we're going to put our eggs in the basket of the one. I think we'll talk about this later, but I think at some point things will come back around. Connected franchise mode was 4 years ago, was it? Or five?
2012. Yeah.
Okay. they're due for something different at some point. I don't think that the franchise modes are stale more than they are stable. Mm-hmm. And if you can do that, I think the way they look at it is that's the platform to get people interested in other aspects of the game. I mean, look at all the crossover in Madden and in FIFA driving you over to Ultimate Team, the things that you do in the career modes. And that's fine. I'm happy with where things are. I don't feel like that the staple modes for which people go to buy a game are getting less attention. I feel like they're getting as much attention as they can possibly be given, especially in the case of NBA Live. So,
yeah. Rich, you tend to be more of a traditional gamer, a franchise mode guy, right? So, like this, the move towards more in the way of the Ultimate Teams and the single player career / story modes. I mean, how does that leave you feeling, or does it not bother you at all? Do you not see a problem with that?
Well, we've had the introduction of story modes and in various incarnations now over the last couple of years, especially in three different franchises, FIFA, Madden, and NBA 2K, a couple different ways. So there's no lack of non-Ultimate Team type modes being introduced. So I think that we're getting all sorts of cool stuff. I mean, I've been saying it for a long time. There's a lot of great stuff in sports games right now. So I completely understand the additional revenue streams. I think these games are doing a much better job of doing both of those things, you know, individual non-revenue driven stuff and revenue driven stuff, better than some other people think they are.
All right, so the other big kind of introduction feature-wise in NBA 2K18 is what they call the neighborhood. It's an open world area, essentially a hub for my player. Okay, so there's a lot of terms in NBA 2K, but your my player is your created guy, and then you take him through to play My Career, which is kind of the story mode, My Park, which is the team up online and in a park setting, and then Pro-Am, which is the team up online new kind of esport arena that they've created. But what they've done is they made this big open world area where you can reside along with other people who are online, and then you can walk around with your character and enter different stores and enter different arenas to play different modes. And my you know, my initial impression of it was, I don't see the big deal here. It's essentially taking what was in the menus and just making something out of it, which is fine. It gives you a little more life to things. But when I timed it that I was in my court, okay, and it took me 2 minutes to get from there to the barbershop to change my hairstyle, I was like, this is just wasting my time. It didn't really benefit me in any way as a player. Oh, and I'm just curious about your opinion on the concept of this, because like I said, 2K made a big deal out of this as some kind of revolutionary thing. I think they referred to it as something that's going to change the way sports games are played or something along those lines. Like they really hyped it up big time, and I'm not sure I see the point behind it. What did you think about what they did here with the neighborhood?
I think what they did to change the way sports video games were played online was the introduction of My Park, where you were like running basketball multiple courts at a time, you know, joining games, watching other games, that kind of thing. This is just walking around a map, and I think it speaks a little more subtly to what I see as NBA 2K's desire to monopolize its users' time. They're happy to take their money. That's true. But you know, when you look at the expectation of time you're going to spend in NBA 2K, you know, on this, you know, road to 99 and all of that other stuff, and what it takes to acquire a dunk package. First, you have to unlock it. Then you have to spend money on it. Uh-huh. And the fact, yes, that's true. You get BC every game. No, I'm not questioning that at all. But they expect you to be playing this game and like no other game. And then when they pile on top of that, walking over to a Foot Locker, you know, to get a new pair of shoes that you have finally, you know, ground up to earn, that does feel a little heavy handed to me. I don't see, I mean, it's interesting. What was it? PlayStation,
Home? Was it?
Yeah. PlayStation Home. You know, we kind of heard the same thing about that, and that never took off because people didn't want to, like, go virtually walk into a virtual movie theater to see a virtual trailer for the game that's coming up. They just wanted to see it,
yeah.
You know. And then there's all this nonsense with the home where you live and how you could outfit it. I mean, and that's been a trait of Visual Concepts games going back years.
Yeah.
You know, the crib. Mm-hmm. And in NFL 2K, when we had a dartboard and all that, I mean, it's nice that they have, first of all, time and resources to put into this sort of thing. But I agree with you that it would also be nice to have a little fast travel in there.
Well, yeah,
because you know,
I think at some point you can earn or buy. I don't know. There's like a skateboard and a bike that you can end up with, but they're both slow also. I mean, like, you can run with your character or there's, you know, you hold turbo or whatever it is, and you can pick up the pace, but it's still like a leisurely jog. And so I don't know if it's intentional, although it kind of reminds me of GTA, which is, of course, from the same parent company.
Yeah, and they have the same expectations for my career as they do with GTA Online. I mean, where they face the same expectations. I still think it speaks, you know, to the overall theme of just this monomania. We are the only game in the tray that you're going to play. We're the only game that you can play if you want to be any good at it, because, you know, like a real sport, you have to work on, if you're not familiar with it, you have to work on one aspect of your game for like three or four games, know where it is on the controller. Okay, now I know how to go to it. Now I'm going to work on another aspect of my game. I feel like if I was to play NBA 2K with any kind of proficiency, it would have to be like the only game that I played for about 2 years. You know, just to touch all of the things in it that are important, much less play it competitively. And then you pile on top of that, they expect you to live your life in the thing. Well, I'm not on board with that.
And then you have to start from scratch next year.
Yeah, that's the other thing too. I mean, at some point, that's, you talk about, you know, the danger, or, you know, doing these things that go away from the league. At some point, they are going to have to figure out, how are we going to confront, you know, not restarting your character every single year. And, you know, maybe there's something in an MMO economy that can provide the answer to that. But at some point, people are going to stop buying editions and they're going to start buying software as a service, and they're going to expect to hang on to their players anyway.
Hey, we're going to take just a moment here to thank our new strategic partner, Gamer Saloon. These guys have a really cool thing going on, and everybody here in the Press Rock community is excited. We're going to be doing a lot of cool stuff with them this fall. Gamer Saloon is a place where you can play any game for any amount of money, anytime, day or night. It's a completely customizable gaming for cash experience. So you can rally your friends and you can create tournaments, or you can play one versus anybody in the world. You can play in these team matches. It's completely customizable, and you can play for just a little bit of money, or you can put a little bit more money on the table if you want to. It's just completely a different way to play your games with your friends. And to, hey, look, if you got big skills and you want to go out there and show them off, go for it. Or if you're like me, you're not really the greatest player in the world, but you really just want to take Pasta Padre's money or That Sports Gamer's money or Millennium's money and just sort of say, hey, guys, here's what's happened. You know, when I'm really on my game, I can beat you guys and I can win a little cash. But it's mostly just about having fun and bragging rights. And you can, as I said, you can play any game for any amount, anytime, day or night. And here's how you can help us at the Press Rock Podcast. Go download the Gamer Saloon app. It's on iOS and Google. Use the code PRESSROW. You'll get a 50% bonus. So if you put in, like me, $20, you'll get an extra $10. And you can play in these tournaments, just a few bucks per tournament if you want. Or you can do individual challenges or all your own stuff. Again, it's completely customizable. But you get a 50% bonus on whatever you put in. And you're helping out the Press Rock Podcast do what we do, so we can keep talking about all these great sports games that we love all year long. So go to Gamer Saloon, get the app, or go to the website. When you sign in, use the code PRESSROW. You get a 50% bonus. You can pay with any major credit card, or like me, with everything through PayPal. I use PayPal constantly. Gamer Saloon, PRESSROW is the code. Help us out. Help Dan out. Let's have some fun. We're going to be doing a lot of great stuff with Gamer Saloon this fall. All sorts of PRESSROW tournaments, streams, and all sorts of craziness. It's going to be awesome. And I'm going to beat all the guys in the Press Rock community. All of them. They have yet to see what I can do on that virtual field. Gamer Saloon. Use the code PRESSROW. Get some extra money. Have some fun. Join us. Help out the Press Rock Podcast.
All right. I'm here with Kat Bailey, editor-in-chief of US Gamer. Now, Kat, we've talked about the potential, or maybe lack thereof, for sports games to succeed on Nintendo Switch on previous occasions. There are two big sports games coming to Switch right now, with FIFA 18 and NBA 2K18. Now, EA Sports is offering a FIFA version that's undeniably inferior to that found on the PS4, Xbox One, and PC, because it doesn't run the Frostbite engine, and because of that, it also doesn't have the Journey story mode. But 2K Sports made an NBA 2K game that is basically identical in terms of its engine and its feature set, but because of that, maybe it faced a larger challenge in getting it to run smoothly on this hardware that has some more limitations to it. How do you feel that NBA 2K18 turned out on the Switch? Because I know you reviewed this one specifically on US Gamer.
Yeah, I reviewed it specifically because I was really interested in it. And I mean, I just happened to get a code for it. So I was like, oh, and so that was the one I ended up playing because, so a little behind the scenes, I had originally freelanced it out to somebody else because I was busy with a lot of other stuff at the time. And that ended up not really working out. So I decided to just go, I'm reviewing the Switch. I've been playing a whole bunch of the Switch version and I have thoughts on that. And nobody else has really reviewed the Switch version specifically except Nintendo Life. So why not? And I took a slightly different approach than usual. I outlined a lot of what was new with it. And then I talked about specifically what the Nintendo Switch version brings to it. Mm-hmm. TLDR, I like it. I mean, basically. Yeah, I did not give it a super great score. I give it a 3 out of 5, but that's because, I mean, there are some real technical issues, unfortunately, in my career. For example, if you're playing just the portable version, when you go into the locker room, it slows to a crawl, and the audio drops out entirely, which is a real drag because it definitely takes away from kind of the polish and the presentation and everything. And as much as I find it annoying that I can't skip the cutscenes, I do want to hear what they have to say. Yeah. It makes it that much more annoying that I can't hear what they say and I can't skip the cutscene.
That's a good point. Yes, I that would be very frustrating.
I play it, but if you play it on docked mode, it's better. I've heard that the PS4 version and the Xbox One version also has these sorts of problems. So is that true, Brian?
It hasn't happened for me. I've seen people mention it, though, so maybe it's sparingly. I'm not sure what might be causing it, but yeah. And I don't think it's wide. I just don't think it's widespread as far as I've seen. It didn't affect mine, at least. And I was playing it on the Xbox One, which seems to have its own share of issues. But not that one for me, at least.
Okay. Well, if that's the case, then the Switch version is even copying the bugs from the other ones, which is pretty impressive. But I think that the technical issues in that regard, at least, it's every time I've tried restarting my Switch, I've tried various other things, but it hasn't worked. So the only time that the locker room scenes work is when I'm plugged into the dock, which for me that's a big hit, unfortunately. And then also one of the bigger problems is that the Switch, just the fact that it always has to be connected online for my career, just really takes away from the portability, unfortunately. And the portability is the main selling point of the Nintendo Switch, and my career would be so great if I could play the entire story mode without, you know, having to be online portably. Like, I think that would be really addictive.
What you're saying is you basically have to be somewhere where there's Wi-Fi in order to progress through that mode?
Yeah, pretty much. Mm-hmm. And I'll be playing on a plane or something like that, and I won't really have access to Wi-Fi to be able to connect to the servers, right, with virtual currency and all that. So when you're playing offline, it just progresses you through a simple NBA schedule, and it's just exponentially less interesting.
So you're not earning VC in those moments?
Earning VC. It's a separate thing. It's just a totally separate mode.
Oh,
very bare bones. It just drops you straight into a regular NBA schedule with a team of your choice, and you start playing through it.
So as far as gameplay goes, I know the frame rate is 30 frames per second on Switch compared to 60 on the other consoles and PC. Does that make a big difference to you? And do you see a difference between when it's docked versus when you take it on the go?
To your first question, believe it or not, it's actually not a big deal. It feels great to me. Now, I'm not an NBA 2K super fan like some people. I don't play it exclusively. I play the other sports games more, though I do enjoy my share of NBA 2K. But having said that, it did not bother me at all. The I did not really notice the lower frame rates, especially when I was playing in portable mode. The docked mode is definitely slightly smoother in the cutscenes than the handheld mode, but not so much that it's like particularly noticeable. It might, I just noticed that when I docked it, it was ever so slightly smoother. So I, when I'm playing it on handheld mode, it looks really good and it feels really good. And I was like, wow, this is super impressive, man. And the pre-game shows and everything look really fantastic. And it's easily the best looking game on the Nintendo Switch. It's really phenomenal. So it's such a drag that my career, you know, is so gimped, for lack of a better term.
So would you choose, you know, knowing how much you like the Switch as a system and how much you like sports games, as far as NBA 2K goes, all things, you know, if you could go back knowing all of this and you could only have one version, would you still choose it on the Switch, even with some of the bugs and the limitations you mentioned?
I think so, because I do not, I like being able to just break out my Switch and play a random game of NBA 2K. And because I don't play NBA 2K, you know, on the super regular, I'm not the kind of person who plays it for months at a time. And I find that the commitment gets to be a little bit much playing it on the couch. I'm much happier to break it out on the Nintendo Switch. So yes, I would pick it on the Nintendo Switch, all things considered, mainly because I'm not a huge My Career player. I'm much more of a My GM player. And My GM is great on the Nintendo Switch. It's totally accessible offline. You have no problems whatsoever. And to me, like, that's awesome. Great. Now I can play that anywhere I want, anytime I want. Perfect. And if I happen to be connected to the internet, I'll also play My Career. They're, all things considered, technical problems aside, and I'm really hoping that they patch these and fix them up. It's actually a really strong port. It's just right now it has a few limitations.
Yeah. All right, so the other thing I wanted to get into with you, you know, sports games generally, they aren't really covered much by mainstream gaming sites unless maybe it's a press release that's gone out or they find a funny glitch with a game. But sports games are consistently among the biggest sellers every year, and still they're virtually ignored. It's something that's fascinated me, and I just don't really understand why that's the case for so long. But occasionally we'll come across a big issue that someone, like one site, covers and then others jump on board. And we had that right now, and you kind of got the things rolling with the virtual currency. You wrote an article on US Gamer about how you thought it was damaging the experience, or kind of ruining the game in a sense, the way VC is implemented in NBA 2K18. And I think that the key difference is that it, in a lot of people's minds, it's really damaging the experience for people who don't play. It's not exactly optional. Like, a lot of times we let things go because you don't need to buy it to enjoy the game, or you don't need to buy it because it's just cosmetic or whatever it might not be. But it actively feels like the game's being designed in a way to punish people who don't pay extra money. So you wrote about that. And then we've seen sites like Kotaku pick it up. We've seen a lot of big YouTubers put out videos which have tens of thousands of views on it. And we're also seeing consumers bombard sites like Metacritic with user reviews that are super low. I think it's like in the threes now, the average on Metacritic. And people are upset about it, or they're just recognizing it now. I don't know exactly what it is. But Kat, could you explain why people are upset right now with VC and 2K18 and why you think it might be a problem for the game?
I think it's just come to a head. I think that for a while, people were kind of tolerating it because the game still had a really good reputation. The generation was relatively new. But we've gotten to a point where people just are feeling the emphasis more and more and more on VC, and they're sick of it. I mean, so the thing with NBA 2K, especially this year, the reason that it's such a glaring issue this year is that there were some major, major freaking glitches where people were losing their My Player, their My Careers, and losing all the VC that they had. And so that's a huge glitch, and they're going to have to wait a bit for 2K to address that. And that just brings into focus the fact that you are totally reliant on your connection to the online servers, and you are totally at the mercy of what's going on here with VC, and that stinks. And I've always found it kind of distasteful that they tied to player progression and that kind of thing to VC and that kind of thing. But there's also been, like, last year there were some serious server problems. Server problems have always been a thing with NBA 2K, haven't they?
Oh, yes.
The fact that you've always had to be connected to them. And, yeah, it's just all – people were getting pretty annoyed last year, and it's just the fact that it's not any better this year and it is, in fact, worse has just prompted a lot of people to go, no, screw this. And the reason I wrote my article was because I've been monitoring the NBA 2K community, and people are up in arms with about these glitches, and then they are up in arms about and then they are getting even more and more annoyed about the VC. And I mean, I had to write about it, right? Like, and that was my cue to be like, you know, NBA 2K is an amazing game. I gave it a very good review last year because even though it's had its flaws, I've always been stunned by its ambition, how much fun it is to play on the court, mm-hmm. how high level the presentation is. There's a reason that this series has a super duper fandom, but they've just been heaping more and more microtransactions on top of all of this, and it's the worst.
Yeah, I think there's a few key things in here, and that's number one. They're starting you, when we talk about my career, they're starting you artificially low. You're starting rated 60. And if they were designing a game to simply be fun for people, you wouldn't start at a 60. I saw some analysis done. I think it was on Reddit. Somebody had put the numbers together and figured out it would take about 300 games of my career, 300 games of, you know, actual games you've played within your career, to get your character leveled up to an 85 overall. That's why people in 300 games, I mean, we're talking,
that's multiple seasons.
Yeah. So, you know, is the game fun when you're a 60 rated player, when I'm missing layups all the time? Like, I had to go as a reviewer for my review. I had to spend money on VC to get my character to a place where I could actually assess the game properly, because my guy couldn't make layups at a 60 rated. He couldn't make
a shot. In fairness, you miss a lot of layups even with good players, yes, in this game. I don't know what is up with this version, but holy crap.
Yeah, that is an issue that I've seen mentioned elsewhere. So, you know, so you're starting artificially low, and then not only are you having to essentially pay to get your player to a point where he's fun to play with, but if you want to go on and play any of their online modes, Park, Pro-Am, you're not going to be able to compete online because everybody else online has guys who are in the mid-80s already because they went and spent $100 on VC.
Yeah, you're like totally gated out of it. Yeah. And not only that, but you're seeing them put more and more emphasis in this version, which is why I think everybody kind of took notice, because you got this new neighborhood thing, right, which is kind of this open world online hub.
Yep.
And it's really just there to be like, okay, we're putting more emphasis than ever on your character appearance and microtransactions, yep, in that regard. And we want you to play in Pro-Am because Pro-Am is our most popular mode, and that's the one where we make the most money. So that's why we're going to integrate it as much as humanly possible into the standard My Career experience. And I don't actually think that's a bad idea, actually, but all it's really done is really bring into focus how microtransaction heavy NBA 2K18 really is.
You know, I'm curious what you think about as far as how should reviewers handle something like this? Because when I did my review of NBA 2K18, I actually talked about the VC in the review, and I talked about how, you know, it's not going to change until consumers actually stand up against it. But I didn't have that influence my review score. It didn't affect the actual score I gave the game. I couldn't lower the score because we've seen, like you mentioned earlier, and like we've been going on for many years now, we've seen that consumers have accepted this form of currency and this implementation, which goes throughout the entirety of NBA 2K, except for it's my league, really, is the only thing that that is left untouched. But for every person that buys, you know, it might not buy the game for it or is irritated by it, many more are going to drop that $100 on day one. And so I was in a place where I couldn't let that affect the score, kind of my personal belief on how I think it damages the game, because the masses clearly don't mind, or they haven't minded over the years. Do you think that something like VC is something that should go into reviews, and from a personal standpoint, from a reviewer, they should, because there are a couple reviews that have gone up for this game that have been pretty low scored. And largely because of the VC. I'm just not sure. I mean, I think you can justify either way, but I'm curious what you think as far as how something like VC, something on the outside that affects the enjoyment for some people, but for others who don't seem to mind it, how do you approach that?
I mean, yes, I do think that it should absolutely be taken into account, because it's a hot button issue for a lot of people, and they want to know. And not only that, but I am strongly anti-microtransaction, because especially microtransactions that fundamentally compromise the gameplay. And let's be perfectly honest here, NBA 2K's gameplay is compromised and has been compromised for a while now. And honestly, I should have called it out sooner. I should have been beating that drum a lot earlier than I did, and maybe better late than ever. Better late than never. But I mean, the fact that they've made it into such a grind, that makes the gameplay objectively worse. And therefore, I feel like it should be called out. You know what else kind of does that? Like, people are, for some reason, are always praising Madden Ultimate Team's like large number of solo challenges and everything, because it's a good opportunity to make coins. But what it actually is a mega grind.
Oh yeah.
Where you have to play literally dozens upon dozens upon dozens of hours grinding through these frankly really boring challenges to be able to get these cards. The only reason that I just kind of shake my head and ignore it with Madden is because it's compartmentalized into one mode, right? It's not, yes, Mutt is technically the flagship mode, but I feel like I can enjoy the rest of the game and be like, okay, Mutt's over here. Whereas my career, like, it's the story, it's the best mode in the game, they've tied it into so many different aspects, it feels so much harder to ignore with my career.
Yeah, and the currency is spread everywhere, so when you earn currency, you have to decide, am I putting this these earnings into improving my character, am I going to buy a t-shirt, or am I going to spend a lot of coins on haircuts and facial hair and tattoos. These are things that weren't charged for in the past that are charged for now, which I think is part of the reason why it's been covered more by other media. These are easy things to grab onto and say, look how absurd this is, 1500 VC for a haircut.
Stupid.
Yeah.
And they talk too much. But the final straw is that you have to be connected online.
Yeah.
That the VC forces you to be online to enjoy this stuff and puts you at the mercy of the servers. And especially playing on the Switch, that's just a bridge too far for me. I just want to say that this is really unfortunate for NBA 2K18, because they have had such a great reputation for so long, and I feel like this is it. That their reputation really is in tatters now, because the mainstream media has finally kind of taken notice to the fact that, NBA 2K has really gone overboard with the microtransaction things. And maybe that won't impact their sales, but reputation does count for something. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely think that maybe next year, if NBA Live is really good, suddenly the door might be open. The door might be open.
Thank you, Kat, for coming on. I know you were busy tonight, and so I appreciate you taking the time out to give us some thoughts on the Switch and on VC. And we'll have you back soon for talk about some other games. So thanks, Kat, from US Gamer. Appreciate you taking the time out. So as Kat and I just discussed a bit, there's a big blow up around the implementation, the way it's implemented, the virtual currency in NBA 2K18. Now, this kind of fascinates me because we've dealt with it for a number of years now. It goes all the way back to like 2K13. And of course, we covered heavily NBA 2K14, which 2K Sports tried to turn into an always online, always necessary to be connected game, and their servers couldn't hold up under that, and it left people with an unplayable game for sometimes weeks at a time. They had to course correct after that with VC, but it's remained in the game, and it's remained a big part of the entire game. It reaches pretty much every area except for my league. Now, there's media finally picking up on this, like they're just discovering it now, but it is worse than it was last year. 2K still starts your character artificially low. They still charge for everything from attributes to accessories and apparel and things that are cosmetic, all out of the same pool. And now they're charging for things they didn't charge for in the past. Haircuts and facial hair and tattoos. And this is what people are noticing. They're also, you know, handing out less VC for playing the game. So as I mentioned in Kat's segment, someone on Reddit did the math and came out that it'd take about 300 full games of my career to get your player to an 85. Or, of course, you can just spend 50 to 100 bucks and buy your way there, which is what a lot of people did. It's obvious a lot of people pay to get their characters up. And now, can I blame them for that? Not necessarily, because this is how it's designed. They make the game less fun at the beginning so that you feel like you have to pay your way. So, let's start with you, Mills. Haven't heard from you in a bit. How do you feel about what they're doing with VC this year? Has it crossed a line in your mind as far as how they're trying to design? They've been designing the game around it, but maybe they've gone a little too far now.
My feelings can be summed up in one tweet that was put out on September 19th by Ronnie2K.
Uh-oh.
Haircuts, coloring, and facial hair are now 100 VC. Want to make sure it's realistic going forward.
Realistic.
Uh-huh. I mean, really? We have to pay to do different haircuts?
There were haircuts that were as much as 1,500 VC, which it would take you at least like three games worth to earn that much.
And for people that want to play online, both in Pro-Am and on MyPark, 300 My Career games is not a realistic number to get to 85 that, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of other people are already sitting on MyPark waiting to destroy you with their 25 extra attribute points. Pay to win is something that I hate. I've hated it for years. I understand it. I fully understand it. It is the way of life now because people will do it. And as long as people will do it, if you're a business, why not, right? I mean, if people will continue to pay, it's supply and demand. Mm-hmm. You pay for it, the demand's there, you're going to supply it. My problem is when you get past pay to win and start going pay to do everything. Pay for clothing. Pay for, which has been in years past, don't get me wrong, pay for facial hair, pay for, you know, I hate paying to play modes, like having an entry fee to pay to play modes that don't give you currency back, like stuff like that. Mm-hmm. All of that things, it just reminds me of mobile games. And there, I love some mobile games, but every mobile game has that spot where like you can only get so far just playing it until you have to put money into it. And that is how it feels to me that 2K has gotten. 2K says, all right, we have our fan base. We have our centralized crew. We know people are going to buy this game. We are a cultural sensation because they are. NBA is big enough now, has enough popularity, and NBA 2K is big enough that it is reaching, like you said, it's the second biggest sports game in the world. It has global appeal, something that Madden can't have because football is a very North American sport. Mm-hmm. And they're going to use it. it is an infinite revenue stream, and it upsets me because these are things, some of these things are things that you should just be able to do. I should be able to update my player. My face scan looks terrible, but I could fix it if I could just edit like the size of my lips or something. And like, I can't edit like the five hairs they give you are horrible to start the game.
The five free ones.
Yeah, the five free ones are terrible. Yeah. I don't know anyone that has hair, anything like that. Like, but then and what hurts it even more, and I've been called, like, I've been said that I've been really on live this year. What hurts it even more is when I go to live and my face scan, I have had people in my chat say it is uncanny how good that face scan is. And I was able to put facial hair, regular hair, edit it. I'm able to acquire crates for clothing through free co-op play. Well, I mean, outside of Xbox Live Gold or PS Plus, let's put that on the table. But like, there's no cost to get any of that. Mm-hmm. When you compare the two of those, it just makes what is happening with VC even worse. And yes, I think they've crossed a line, but it's not a line that they're going to come back from because people will pay.
Rich, I know we always discuss and we always certainly understand the need for companies to make money and to find new revenue sources, right? This is not unusual. And it's absolutely necessary. It's part of the reason why these games still exist in the capacity, at least that they do, is that they've found additional revenue sources. But do you feel like there's also a line that can be crossed as far as these things go? Because it's very different. It's a much more aggressive pursuit by 2K for digital revenue because they have it throughout the game, as opposed to a Madden or a FIFA, or for the most part, an MLB The Show, where it's their card modes where the revenue is all generated, but it doesn't really infect the rest of the game.
So there's two lines that can absolutely be drawn. The first is economic, and the second is philosophical. The economic line is drawn when the game, when the revenue starts going down instead of up from how they have implemented VC, right? It's very stark depiction, but clearly if it goes down, that's a line you've crossed. If people stop paying as much. And B, philosophically, which is how do you want the currency to be implemented in the game? How much, you know, how much should it influence various things? And philosophically, I don't know where that line is. I mean, clearly there's a bunch of different opinions out there on this, and they're all discussing it in all sorts of places like Operation Sports, right? Where so it feels to me that they might be pushing it a bit much, but I don't know, again, if that's going to be enough to where it causes either of those lines to actually get crossed. But yeah, there is a line. There's a line when there's a revolt, you know, and revolts can happen on the internet. So it's certainly not implausible.
Yeah. How much does it mean, Rich, that there are websites, there are big YouTubers talking about NBA 2K18 and the VC that probably don't even play the game, but they're reaching kind of Kat said it was something about something to do with reputation as far as, you know, its reputation is getting trashed in a lot of people's minds right now. And that's something that you can't just shake off. It's going to be there next year when people think about the next NBA 2K. How much does the bad press and how much does the bad word of mouth in relation to this, do you think, how much could that harm NBA 2K? Not necessarily now, but maybe going forward if they don't change the way they approach this.
Well, I mean, 2K is no stranger to having negative press, and it hasn't hurt them yet. So, you know, in the world in which we live, you know, press coverage and YouTube coverage is important, but is getting updated every moment. And so things have a tendency to also be forgotten extremely quickly.
Yeah.
So I don't know, because unless the press and the subject maintains persistence for a while, that may be when it changes it. But again, I don't know that it can, unless it becomes overwhelming, because again, clearly the revenues are up, the sales are up, and they've had all sorts of issues well documented by mainstream and niche press for years.
Oh, and, you know, writing for Polygon and, you know, as we've seen a bunch of sites start to pick up on this, do you see this as a mainstream story? Do you feel like this has the reach of something similar you'd see to if people were in an uproar over Destiny 2, right? That gets covered heavily everywhere. Sports games, you know, it tends to take a really big controversial type story to get coverage. Do you feel like this is one of them, and this is kind of a big something they should be really concerned about, and something they should really evaluate as to any changes they make here in the near future?
Yeah, I think it is a story of mainstream attention, and that's for two reasons. The first is that there was a big glitch associated with it that wiped out, you know, people's progress and their money.
Yeah, sure.
You know, that's not a trivial thing. Doesn't matter what the game is, that gets coverage. And then, of course, it reminds everybody of just how heavily microtransacted NBA 2K is. And the other thing, too, is I think the mainstream kind of still regards sports as a boutique, and they don't go in it very much, but they don't really know what's going on in there. But, hey, wait a minute, are these guys trying to get away with something that other people can't really get away with? I mean, what if this was happening in GTA Online, you know, that kind of nonsense? Mm-hmm. You know, you see the furor that has grown up around Shadow of War in the, you know, loot crates, loot boxes. I don't even understand the system. I understand that people are mad about it. You know, that's my analogy. That's a mainstream story, and I don't know anything about that game. You know, the For Honor, which I did review, faced its own real bad microtransaction controversy, cost them, nobody announces player population, of course, but I think it did cost them some momentum as a fighting game and as a game that people wanted to play. But I think the difference between something like For Honor and NBA 2K is, and I know that people are going to roll their eyes and get mad at me and think I'm shilling for Ubisoft here, but you know, the For Honor stuff was, they never intended for that. People were complaining about not being able to collect everything. And what's going on in my career in NBA 2K is you're talking about things that are basically essential to having fun. Dunk animations, you know, clothes that are beyond a generic white t-shirt and jeans, hairstyles. You know, you can always tell who the new guy is because he looks like a new guy.
Uh-huh. You know, intentionally. Like, that's what they want. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because he's like, I'm getting my ass kicked out of here. I'm not going to spend any VC on cosmetic stuff. I need, you know, better dribble rating or something like that. And what I was thinking of is, as Rich was talking, is it's like, I think the line is the population in my career plateauing? That's when you get to the line. Their revenue may still continue to go up because it's also a whale model. There could be people who go, this is the only video game I buy all year, and I'm happy spending $300 on it. And people who spend $300 on 5 video games are unhappy with it, you know, but it doesn't really matter. You know, they've got still that potential to hit the jackpot. But if my career is, if my, you know, if this neighborhood thing, if that's plateauing, because people go, you know, they boot into it, they get the game, all right, I'm excited, I want to play. And they realize that they're going to get the hell beat out of them, you know, in the park by all these people who have paid to level up to 85. And they either have to do that or get the hell beat out of them forever, you know, to complete the games to get up to 85. They're probably going to drop out and play the offline modes or the career modes. They still have the game. The game, it still counts as a sold copy. 2K Sports will still tout that. But if this online ecosystem starts to plateau just in player numbers, I mean, I think the revenue will only continue to go up. They'll figure out some way to keep that going. But, you know, if it just becomes this hardcore area where you got to pay to be in there, you know, I think once it crosses the line into that territory, it will be too late. They will be unable to, I think, reverse that economy and still appeal to, you know, the hardcore who's been in there and still make the money that they expect. I mean, I think that's where that thing is headed.
Yeah, so we do have to just real quickly mention the, as you mentioned there earlier, Owen, the deleted My Player issue. I'm wondering, Mills, what's going on with discussion on that on Operation Sports? It's clear that thousands of people have lost their My Players, which means not just hours that they invested into the game, but for many people, quite a lot of money that they invested into the game just vanished, just disappeared. And here we are almost a week after the game came out, and it doesn't seem to have been solved yet. So what have you been seeing going on as far as the discussion there in OS?
Well, it's one of the top viewed threads. It's a game crashed. So did the 250,000 VC I spent on my career.
Lord.
and if you remember correctly, one of the pre-order bonuses was what? 250,000 VC.
Is that with the $150 version of the game?
Yes, yeah. You get a lot with it. To this point, I don't know that 2K. I know they've addressed it, that they're looking into it, but I don't think they've acted on it yet.
There's no
anyone
solution
can correct
yet.
Me. Yeah, no solution yet. I'm going to guarantee they will find some way to repay everybody their either full amount.
Oh, yeah.
Or to give their player with all the VC, but it's not a good look.
No.
And again, this is one of those times that global appeal of the number two sports game, in the world with the number one mode that everybody plays gets put that spotlight onto it. It's still a sports game. So there is, some niche appeal to this. But as Owen said, money being spent in games is becoming a highlight and a problem in gaming media at this point. And to lose something that you spent, not so much losing the My Career player, it's losing the money around it that is creating the anger. Can you imagine if like you had a 98 overall Madden Ultimate team and all of a sudden one day you logged in and it was gone? It's the same idea. Any one of these sports games, if you would lose one of your Ultimate team that you spent, 500, however much money on it, and it was gone, that's a huge problem. And in OS, it's like I said, it's not going well. There aren't a lot of people defending 2K on this one.
Oh, yeah, it can't be defended.
So it's more how quickly can 2K act on this? How quickly can they replace what was lost? And how are they going to replace what was lost? Do they have records of everything was lost? I would hopefully say, considering everything is server-based and linked to the server being online.
2K servers.
Well, hopefully they have some kind of record for all of that. And I think in the end, people will be happy. But it is not a good look for a company that has constantly had issues with, as you said, servers every year. This is another online-based thing that just doesn't work.
All right. So let's transition here to another or the other NBA game. And it's definitely not as deep as NBA 2K. It's definitely not as polished, with the exception of some of the issues we talked about. It doesn't offer, it's not the complete package. But I will say it's a friendlier game. It's an easier game to get into. And it has we've been dealing with over the years, NBA Live, false starting, not releasing or putting out incomplete products. And they've dug a giant hole for themselves. I think NBA Live 18 pretty much gets them back to where they need to be right now. It's not, it's a very difficult game. I don't think I could recommend it over the competition, but I feel like this could be the turnaround year that EA's been looking for. Gameplay to me, really fun. The one career mode, I'll take that over my career in NBA 2K. It's just that you have things like a very poor franchise mode, which Rich is, I think, going to debate that it's not later on. But then a kind of mediocre Ultimate Team. It's just not, it doesn't have the content yet to compete. But it's a good alternative. I think it's solid as an alternative. And Mills, I know you've played a lot of NBA Live now. I'm pretty sure I've seen you mentioning the amount of fun you've been having with the game on streams. How do you feel about where Live is at this year, and if this was kind of the turnaround year that they were looking for?
Let's start with this. Live works. I think that is the first major goal that they got to. The game works. Nothing is broken. To that point, it plays a very good game of basic basketball. It has the off-ball movement is good. The 5-on-5 is good. The street ball excels. The 5-versus-5 street ball and the 5-versus CPU co-op missions excel. There is no way to pay to make your player better. We talked about that earlier as a comparison. But yeah, once you get into the modes, franchise mode is very basic. It works. You know, you can go through a franchise mode. There's free agency, trading, all of the basics, but it's missing, you know, some of the more advanced features you would see out of a basketball game. Like if you put it up next to 2K, nothing holds a candle to 2K, much less live at this point for franchise mode. Mm-hmm. But it's there. Ultimate Team, same kind of issue. Is like you have Ultimate Team and you have solo challenges, which are full games you have to play. You have head-to-head. You cannot challenge a friend yet.
I know I got tweets about that, just to jump in here real quick. And
yep.
I think, I don't know if something happened when they were finishing up the game, but I remember seeing an exchange on Twitter when the game was first out on EA Access, and people were, or there was one person in particular that was responded to, asked about how do I play a friend online? And the NBA Live, the official account for the game, controlled by EA, responded like you could. It said, no, you can do this. I think they actually thought the feature was in there and then it's just missing somehow and then it's going to be patched in. Because there's no way they intentionally decided we don't need a way for people to play head-to-head against each other.
Well, especially not with how easy it is to play with each other in the one mode or live events or live run.
Right.
Like, it is incredibly easy to find games, first of all, and to play with your friends or play with other people. You jump into a lobby, it's legitimately full within 30 seconds. If you're just looking for random players, much less your own friends, which you can create a private lobby for. I think the biggest thing that ups the fun factor for live is the accessibility. You can pick up and play live mostly within the first, you know, hour or two. It is the polar opposite to 2K. And I don't think that's an insult to 2K. When I say competition is good between the two games, I guess I don't really mean competition. I love the fact that both games play differently. Live, you can pick up and dribble and shoot and, you know, call offense and all this other good stuff very easily. You can pick up and play with your friends very easily. 2K, like I said, might take a couple weeks for you to get it, but it might be rewarding at the end there. I think Live's accessibility is a very huge draw to the game. There are still issues. I still have rebounding issues in the game. The transition game is okay at best, but there's nothing better than just jumping on and playing 5 versus Allen Iverson and his custom Philadelphia 76ers squad and trying to get crates full of, you know, warm-ups to dress your guy. Like, it's just a fun game that has highlight moves and stuff and highlight real things, and you can break somebody's ankles and it tells you you broke your ankle. And the defensive counter system, it's a complete gameplay based on counters. Like, you, if you go left, it shows you go left. You know why your guy burnt you. Every time on defense, if someone beats you, you know it. Whereas in 2K, you may have to dig to find out why. I think for the casual basketball fan, 2K might be a little too advanced at this point, and Live becomes that option. This year, it is still behind 2K in almost every aspect outside of the one and online. I like their online co-op better. Mm. That being said, it's its first year back, and I think that's a win for it.
Oh, and you reviewed the game for Polygon. So you've been covering, obviously, NBA Live since as far back as we can remember. And it's ups and downs and everything. You know, yeah. So how do you feel about NBA Live 18?
I think it's like, you know, the first time we can talk about this franchise and not use the word beleaguered. You know, I think that, first of all, to speak to Mills's point here, it's not necessarily competition, but it is differentiation, and that's still just as important in the market. And I won't, you know, I'll echo a lot of what he said without repeating it, but there's nothing wrong with wanting a simpler option. You know, people roll their eyes about, you know, casuals or, you know, not committed gamers or all this other nonsense. That's a bunch of treehouse crap. You know, I'm sorry that my gameplay is so varied that I don't have time to spend six consecutive months on something. I still think that I'm pretty good at basketball video games, and I enjoy NBA Live. I think first of all, the best thing I can say about NBA Live is that I understand what I am doing as I am doing it. The shot meter this year is a really it's a really concise representation of how good the shot you took was. And it's like if I'm putting up one and I get it to the top of the meter or near to the top of the meter, but I'm defended and it's also, you know, a little bit longer range, And it clanks, but I go, oh, but I was at the top. Well, you know, maybe it wasn't a good shot to take because those things are still missed. And it's a little different from how NBA Live 16 did it, because they still had ratings and percentages affecting you even if you maxed that meter that went up and down. Here it's like it's a little more deterministic. If you actually do fill the whole thing up, I think it goes in. You know, I mean, I can't say that with direct certainty, because if they truly had it as a skill-based thing, there'd be people who would be hoisting up from, you know, half court, but then you have Steph Curry, so I don't know. But the other thing too is the defensive call-outs that were mentioned earlier as well. I like that because, and I've said this, you know, several times, so people who read the review are probably going, Owen's beating this drum, but, you know, when novices play basketball defense, they're spamming the steal button, they're spamming the jump and block button. You know, they're not really playing defense, you know, cutting off passing lanes, moving here, trying to, you know, counter where a guy is going. And I think the way that they've done that, the information that it gives to the user is sensible, but it also creates the opportunity to do those dramatic things like make the steal. I think the window is a little bit long on some of those, but it's still there. And then you go, oh, now I know why I stole the ball. I didn't just get lucky on the button. I beat, you know, the guy did not beat me to this position, and I, you know, bumped him and I got my hand on the ball. It is a game whose gameplay I think is smartly crafted for the one. I think they knew that this is where people were going to spend most of their time. So that was the baby that got all the milk, and that's fine. I would much prefer to sit down with the one because I can play it, than, you know, go get my ass kicked in NBA 2K or spend a lot of money there. And I think that that's the other area in which EA Sports is sort of being a little shrewd about this, which is like, okay, so, you know, they've probably done the market research. You know, they know that NBA 2K is a very complicated game to play if you don't have a lot of familiarity with it. So how can we get people who don't have familiarity, you know, with video game basketball to maybe try us out? Well, they do these things. And then they also know that, you know, NBA 2K has this rep for being like a big high roller game. And I think the way that they split out, I mean, I don't know that I understand the crate and the rep system very well. It's a little complex, but I do know that leveling up my character and getting better at the game, that is completely separate. And I never have to make the choice between a cosmetic item, you know, with currency that I have acquired playing in the game, not currency that I've paid for. I never have to make the choice between a cosmetic item and, you know, a better pass rating. Mm-hmm. And I really like that. And I think a lot of people will cotton to that. I just don't think that this has enough meat on the rest of its bones to really, you know, chip off a huge block. I don't think we're looking at a situation where it's like, you know, 2K has a scandal. It's got this glitch and it's got all these microtransactions and people are pissed off. And here's NBA Live to the rescue. We are a long ways away from that. But what I said to finish off my review was, I mean, we can at least talk about, this is a great platform to build on that they have. And that's a fatal thing to say to an iterative product, because then the people reading the review go, well, why the hell should I buy it this year if it's going to be better next year? Well, the answer is next year's product isn't out yet, but still they actually have a platform to build on now. Whereas opposed, you know, the last ones, they were just, you know, doing anything they could and then throwing it out. And now I think I see something where they can actually implement like a 3-year roadmap on this and bring the franchise back.
Rich, I'd love to hear your thoughts on NBA Live 18, and specifically, I think you want to talk about franchise mode.
Yeah, I mean, I'm playing NBA Live via EA Access, right? Haven't bought the game, but I do subscribe to EA Access. I played a few hours, and I have thoroughly enjoyed everything I've played, and I've been only playing the franchise mode. And I love how I can jump in, and it's like, hey, similar to Madden, right? Do you want to play the whole game? Do you want us to take you to a moment in time, but you can jump in any time before, or do you want us to just simulate the whole thing? And I've been doing that, and I'm playing as the Washington Wizards, which are not my team, but my team is the Brooklyn Nets, and they're terrible. It's not fun to play with a terrible team. So, but it still presents a challenge, right? The Wizards are good. They're really good. You know, they got John Wall and Bradley Beal for starters, right? And but they're not obviously the Cavaliers or the Warriors or anything like that. So there's still a little bit of a challenge there. For my life with where I am right now, there's a lot to be said for simplicity in things, not taking away anything from anything else, right? I mean, for crying out loud, I represent two sports games, three, one mobile, two PC that are all about deep strategy and incredible simulation over the course of micromanaging your entire franchise. I get that. But conversely, and NBA 2K is very deep franchise mode. Conversely, it's fun just to play some games, go through the schedule, blast through, play a fun game of basketball, sort of have your own season going, and just bang through it without having to do anything else other than that. And I've really enjoyed that aspect of franchise mode. I didn't even realize I was supposed to hate franchise mode until I saw you tell me that I had to. So tell me, Ryan, why do I hate okay. franchise mode?
Okay, franchise mode in NBA Live is kind of a mess, all right? So one thing that they have fixed, first of all, is the game initially released with a fake player in free agency that was signed by the Mavericks every time and would always go on to win Rookie of the Year and average 25 points and like 12 assists. Okay, they took that guy out, thankfully. He should not have been there in the first place. But the other some other issues with franchise... For some reason, they turned it into a weekly schedule instead of a daily one. So, for example, I played the first couple games in my team's season, and my team and the teams I played were the only teams who had a record, who had stats, or anything like that. So then you advance the week, and then that whole week's worth of stuff comes in, even if it's out of order. So it also means late in the season, you don't actually know as far as like playoff seeding and stuff, what's going to happen until you hit that sim button and see the whole week's worth of stuff before it. So there's that.
Okay.
There's also the franchise or the simulation engine is pretty troubled, gave a lot of really weird results. For example, my first time simming got an NBA Finals of the number 6 seeded Miami Heat beating the number 7 seeded Memphis Grizzlies in the finals. So I was like, okay, that could be an anomaly or something. It really wasn't. I simmed a bunch more, and there were teams like the Knicks and the Mavericks and the Clippers and the Hornets that won the title. The Cavs hardly ever made it to the finals. The Celtics didn't make it to the finals at any time that I saw. And the Warriors only won a few times. So, sim engine is an issue. The CPU does not complete any trades. I know where you're going with this, Rich. You're going to say none of this matters to you, right?
I'm not saying... Wow. No, I'm not going to say that. I'm saying, okay, I get where you're coming from. These are legitimate concerns. Keep rolling. I'm with you, man.
The CPU doesn't complete trades. Injuries don't occur during games you play, only during simulations. Of course, we know there's no online component to franchise. An online franchise could have potentially saved some of this. I think if we had been playing together in a franchise like that, Rich.
I totally agree with that. Oh,
also,
my gosh. That would be great.
Yeah. A big one in the community is that you cannot edit any players. That's something that really doesn't matter to me, but seems to matter to a lot of people. So that's where kind of the... And then just the basic nature of it in general. So,
yeah.
If you care only about franchise, if you're a franchise person, I think you'd be disappointed with this franchise mode. But if you're able to ignore it, Rich, and just not worry about it, I mean, I'm not saying you can't have fun.
Right, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to play one season. I don't think I'm going to go past the second and the third season, right? I don't think I'm going to even get into, second or third season, because I don't even know if I'm going to buy this game at the end of my 10 hours. I might. I mean, if I get to 10 hours, right, if I actually do tick that notch, then I could see that, you know, potentially buying it.
Or you'll pick it up when they eventually put it in the vault. You'll start.
Well, playing. I mean, I'll automatically pick it up, right, because I think I just re-upped my EA Access at some point in the relatively recently. So, yeah, it'll be in there too, which is another sort of – it's like a good thing, bad thing, right? You know, because here I am. It's good, and I'm going to play it through EA Access. But then, you know, there's going to be so much – there already is so much to play – it's got to be really compelling for me to say, oh, you know what, I'm going to spend another $40, $45 on it. So I don't know if I'm going to, but I'm going to keep playing it again because I'm enjoying just banging through these games. I'm playing, you know, half games and quarter games because of the play of the moment. So I'm really starting my, you know, my season is getting interesting. I'm learning how to use the players. Like I said, the Wizards are good and they're fun to play as, right? It's just they're fun. So I could see me doing it. But either way, like for the way that I'm using it, which is playing one season just to see if I can win the championship, you know, that's all I'm going to do. So it's not that I don't care about those things. It's just that the way that I'm going to be playing it, that's not going to reduce me much, I think, enjoying myself. Clearly, the whole scheduling thing, you know, not being able to see the standings, that's weird. And who knows, maybe they can even do something about that. But that's definitely unpleasant. No doubt.
So just to end on this then, Mills and Owen, just where do you see NBA Live 18 as far as where does it fit in as we talk about there's a million sports games that come out this month. Your time is limited to play. You know, is this a game that you continue playing or is there just too much competition right now? Mills?
For me, it's a game I'm going to continue playing. I'm a big basketball fan. For me specifically, my time in this game will be for in the one and online for live run and online co-op. I'm a huge fan of how that's set up. I have a bunch of friends who have it, a bunch of people on stream that play with me. So that's fun. My hope is that Ultimate Team gets upgraded to have some more than just full game challenges and more than just head-to-head. Like a draft champs mode would be amazing for that game. Another mode, like I said, some specific challenges as the season goes on where you're not playing full games, like one quarter. I'd love to see sets. I think that's a huge undertaking in a patch, but there are no sets or cards. Those would both extend the game time for me. I think my franchise time for basketball will be spent with 2K, but live definitely has a spot in my rotation.
Owen, how do you feel about NBA Live going forward here this year?
Well, when I get off this review treadmill, I will probably come back to it. I'll probably restart my career because, as I was complaining before, you know, when I play for review, it's like I'm trying to see all kinds of things that I wouldn't normally, you know, play for enjoyment. I think there is an enjoyable game. I want to get back to that, but I've got a lot of other things on my plate too, as you suggest. You know, there's still Madden. There's still FIFA. You know, this is the time of year when I always go, Jesus, why don't I play more FIFA? So yeah, it's sort of in an unfortunate part of the calendar, but I think if they can hang on to their player base in whatever it is in the one, you know, they may see that. We keep talking about mythical recoveries during the playoffs. You know, well, people get interested in basketball during the playoffs again, don't they? I don't know. I would hate to see this thing just parked on EA Access in 6 months. It may come to that. You know, it's been dispiriting to see some of the sales figures for NBA Live over the years. EA has had a high tolerance for it. So who knows? I would probably put this around not number one, two or three. I mean, I've got F1 that I'm playing as well. Yeah. I think the other thing too is my playing habits are not normal at all. And I'm exposed to
probably are.
Right. I'm exposed to a lot of stuff because of the job. And then I go, oh, I mean, I probably wouldn't have bought F1 for myself, but I reviewed it. It's like, oh, hell, I like this game. So, you know, people would buy NBA Live because they go, well, you know, I'll take a flyer on this because, you know, it's cheaper and I'm not going to get, you know, my change shaken out of my pants pockets. And, you know, single player mode looks pretty good. They may stick with it. It may become their game for the year. That'd be great. It'd be wonderful. It is. This is all about having fun. And if it gives people fun, so much the better.
All right. Well, yeah, you know, between us and between the segment with Kat, this ended up being, you know, an hour and a half on the two games, which, you know, I still feel like we had to skirt over a lot. It's always the case. NBA 2K is such a deep game. So many features, so many, you know, so much intricacy in it. And NBA Live, you know, trying to make a comeback. And there's a lot more to these two games than just that. So I'm sure we'll be talking more about the basketball games here as we go on, because they're, you know, 2K is going to be fixing things. Live is probably going to be trying to improve and continue, you know, its place as an upstart and try to break in and get some attention. So, but it's a good thing to have two games, two solid options, and two that are very different in different ways, in different areas, and can appeal to people that might be looking for different types of experiences. So that's always exciting. That's exciting for us. And I'm happy that we get to talk about that too. So thank you, Rich Grisham, Out of the Park Developments, Owen Good from Polygon, Mills Gaming TV. You'll find him on Operation Sports and Twitch. And thank you again to Kat Bailey for joining in as well from US Gamer. And I appreciate everybody out there and decided to listen all the way through and tune into the podcast yet again. So thank you, and we will be back next week with another episode. Take care till then.